KNOM Update News. I'm Matthew Smith, and it's 9:02. This year's Chinook salmon run on the Yukon is poor, and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is preparing subsistence closures to meet escapement goals. The closures begin tomorrow, but with so few fish in the river, it's unknown how long subsistence fishermen will be unable to fish. Fish and Game worked with the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association, a nonprofit group of subsistence fishermen and commercial fishing interests, to estimate a king run this year between 109,000 and 146,000 fish.
We need about 150,000 fish just to meet the escapement goals and subsistence.
That's Steve Hayes, Fish and Game's summer season manager for the Yukon. He says that the number breaks down to about 50,000 fish in both the U.S. and Canada for escapement, with another 50,000 for subsistence needs in both countries. Even if the run comes in on the higher end of that estimate, Hayes says the run will fall short.
Unless something changes, we either don't have enough fish to meet the escapement goals or we'll barely meet the escapement goals, but that's going to take severe restrictions on the backs of the subsistence fishermen.
By mid-June, only 4,500 kings had passed the pilot station sonar site about 120 miles from the mouth of the Yukon. Hayes says those numbers should be 10 times bigger, closer to 45,000 kings during an average run, or 12,000 in years with a later run. To hit escapement targets and make sure enough king salmon make it upriver to spawning grounds in Canada, Fish and Game is preparing to close subsistence fishing on the lower Yukon as the first pulse of king salmon move upriver. There will be 36-hour closures, one district at a time, amounting to about a five-day closure in total. Those begin tomorrow, but more closures could be on the way.
There is a potential that it could end up being more than just one closure in each district. We have to do back-to-back closures. There's a possibility that it could end up being a 10-day closure, or maybe the run's a little better and we can allow a little subsistence in between two closures, but we still have to see the fish before we can really make that decision.
Similar closures on fishing on the Kuskokwim this year have met with frustration by subsistence fishermen. While Hayes says no one is happy with the subsistence limits, he says similar weak runs in 2009 and 2011 have helped all involved recognize the importance of conserving the run. Orville Huntington is the Wildlife and Parks Director for the Chanana Chiefs Conference, a tribal consortium of the 42 villages in interior Alaska. As an upriver subsistence hunter, he says most people were prepared for a bad year.
There's still a possibility of a chum salmon fishery later in the season, but right now we've got to get those kings through and to the spawning grounds. It should be our conservation priority, and it's upon all of us to try to help with that. You know, we're just going to have to take and bite the bullet. There's a lot of us on the Yukon that are willing to not fish at all if we have to.
For now, while subsistence fishermen hope for a strong chum run later in the season, Hayes says Fish and Game will continue to monitor the first pulse of Chinook and is prepared to implement more closures if necessary. A long-awaited U.S. Supreme Court decision is being celebrated by tribes across Alaska and the nation. The Rama Navajo case is a 22-year-old class-action lawsuit against the federal government that sought full payment for contracts that tribes held for health services, law enforcement, and land programs. Anchorage attorney Lloyd Miller has worked on the litigation. He says government attorneys told the Supreme Court justices during the trial that if it was held responsible for the damages, it would be $1 billion.
So now the task before us will be to sit down with the government and try to come up with a precise accounting of how much is required to be awarded to all of the nation's tribes in money damages.
Miller says currently about half of the Bureau of Indian Affairs budget and more than 60% of the Indian Health Service budget are under contract with tribes. Expenses that went unpaid included workman's comp insurance and salary costs that, when unpaid, led to reduced positions. Miller says the impact in Alaska will be huge.
I suspect that at the end of the day, the amounts recovered by Alaska Native communities will be some nine-digit number. It really is quite substantial what the Alaska Native healthcare community has suffered in annual shortfalls year in and year out.
Miller says the funding shortfall averaged about $100 million per year nationally, with about a third of that deficit in Alaska. The U.S. House has passed a bill yesterday ceding tens of thousands of acres of the Tongass National Forest to the Sea Alaska Native Corporation. Representative Don Young was the chief sponsor of the Sea Alaska bill. It passed in the Republican-controlled House with 232 votes, including 16 Democrats. Young's bill allows Sea Alaska to choose federal lands outside limits established in the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Sea Alaska says it will expand the corporation's timber base and allow for future development. Critics include environmental groups and towns. They say it's a giveaway to the Native Corporation and could damage salmon streams, disrupt tourism, and cause conflicts with subsistence rights. The bill now goes to the Senate. The head of the largest organization representing American Indians and Alaska Natives says federal and state governments should provide voter registration at Indian Health Service facilities. Jefferson Keel, the president of the National Congress of American Indians, says the health facility should be designated voter registration sites in the same way state-based public assistance agencies already are. He says the facilities are ideal for voter registration because they already exist in many tribal communities. Keel made the comments in an interview yesterday. His organization's mid-year gathering in Lincoln, Nebraska began on Monday. During his State of Indian Nations address earlier this year, Keel called for American Indians and Alaska Natives to turn out in record numbers for votes. Jacob Weatherby is Nome's new CSO, or Community Service Officer. Originally from Anchorage, Weatherby brings a military background to his position in Nome. He was in the Army, stationed in Fort Hood, Texas. He spent a year in Iraq before returning to the U.S., where he later joined the Air National Guard. As the new CSO, Weatherby says he'll be tasked with community-oriented policing. In addition to handling non-emergency calls, which will free up other officers, Weatherby says part of his job will be to have a visible presence in the community.
I'll be out and about a lot more than what people here are probably used to. I'll be doing a lot of foot patrols, a lot of door-to-door walking the parks, the front street, the beaches, that type of thing. Out there, being present, being visible.
To hear more from Jacob Weatherby about his path to Nome and his new role as Nome's new community service officer, listen to Profiles after this hour's weather and also after the 6 p.m. weather. And the oil pipeline that stretches 800 miles across the Alaska landscape is celebrating a milestone today. The Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline today marks 35 years in production with more than 16.5 billion barrels of oil loaded into the pipeline at Prudhoe Bay for delivery to Valdez, where it's loaded into tankers destined for the West Coast. Oil was loaded into the pipeline for the first time on June 20, 1977. It arrived in Valdez 38 days later. The amount of oil flowing through the pipeline has been declining in recent years as oil reserves on the North Slope draw down. Oil throughput peaked at 2.1 million barrels a day in 1988. It averaged about 590,000 barrels a day last year. The pipeline now accounts for about 11% of U.S. domestic oil supply. And taking a look at the price of gold in New York this morning, gold prices were down $13.20 to $1,605.70 an ounce. Silver was down 26 cents to $28.26 an ounce. The price of zinc was at 84 cents a pound, and Alaska Airlines Flight 151 left Kotzebue on time at 8:08 this morning and arrived a little ahead of schedule in Nome around 8:51, due to depart Nome around 9:47 this morning. It's unofficially 41 degrees outside the downtown KNOM station, 11 minutes past 9 o'clock.